Welcome to Credit Union Conversations Podcast with your host, Mark Ritter, a forward-thinking CEO who excels in helping credit unions, small businesses, and real estate investors succeed. Join Mark as he explores current trends, interviews industry experts, and get fresh insights on optimizing your operations and delivering the best possible services to credit union members.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark Ritter, your host of Credit Union Conversations and the CEO of MBFS. I am sitting from the mountains of north central Pennsylvania, where it is freezing cold, but I enjoy this weather, and it was nice to get a little peace and quiet out here, as I'm one of the few people on my street that is here year round. So we're a business lending CUSO based in suburban Philadelphia, and we have people in credit unions all over the country. And one of the reasons that I enjoy what I do is because I really want and believe in providing credit across the spectrum, regardless of where you live. And I think our credit unions really should be community-focused individuals. And that came to me many, many years ago. When growing up in Northeast Pennsylvania, my father in the coal region was a union electrician. And a few times when I was younger, a very young teenager, money was tight. And he told me, I got some money from our credit union because they're there when we need help. And that always, always has stuck with me. So joining me today is it's a situation a little different because I was introduced to this person through some mutual friends. And sometimes I had business partners and people that I've known and some of my credit unions. But today is my first day talking to Jeff Ivey, the CEO of River City Federal Credit Union. Jeff, thank you for joining me.
Glad to be here, Mark. It's a little warmer here, not much. It's as cold as we've been in Texas.
Yes, as we record this, we're going through the record cold snap across the country, no matter where you live.
Right.
So I wanted to have you on today to really talk about the value from your perspective of the small and mid-sized credit unions in our industry and what you see as the value of the CDFIs and really just spitball a whole bunch of topics at you. So, but first, tell me a little bit of your origin story and background.
Well, I'm a grizzled financial service industry veteran. Been at this for longer than I care to count. But I've been CEO at River City since 2018. And my career includes time at both on both sides. I worked for banks for a lot of years. And for the last 12, 13 years, I've been in the credit union industry. And my time at the banks actually, I think, helped prepare me for my work today. I worked at large corporate, large regional. I worked at some small community banks and doing a variety of things, commercial lending, small business lending, retail. And like I said, joined River City in 2018, where we are a River City is a CDFI credit union. We're also a minority deposit institution and a Juntos Avanzamos certified credit union based in San Antonio, where we serve right now we serve Bexar County, which is home to San Antonio, about 2 million residents in Bexar County. And we do a full range. We do everything. We do personal lending, business lending, a full range of products and services for our members.
That's great. So my high school Spanish let me down a little bit. You'll have to tell me a little bit about the Juntos Avanzamos.
Juntos Avanzamos. Together we advance. It's a certification through Inclusive, which Inclusive is a nationwide organization that supports CDFI and MDI, Minority Deposit Institution, credit unions. I actually am on the board for Inclusive. And Juntos Avanzamos means that we have the products, the services, and the strategy to do a lot of outreach and to properly serve the Hispanic community in our market. Now, in San Antonio, that's kind of we're 65-66% of our market is Hispanic. And it's more than just we have bilingual staff. We actually have the products and services that resonate with the Hispanic community. All of our material is available in Spanish. We have a memorandum of understanding with the Mexican consulate to help serve the immigrant community that comes to San Antonio. So that's a designation we're particularly proud of and does mean a lot to us.
So, And I'm glad you mentioned inclusive. So just for our listeners, that was actually our common bond of the people who introduced us, because we are now a proud inclusive member and have been sponsoring their conference last year and this year. But the piece that I'm and how this whole thing got started was we have an interest in helping Puerto Rican credit unions. And we have been doing that with SBA loans. I love SBA loans, and the community really could use SBA loans, but there was a gap in funding. There really was a gap in the funding. And one thing that I quickly found out is the local Puerto Rican community didn't want to deal with me. They wanted to deal with our native Puerto Ricans that we have on staff.
Yeah, the cooperativas in Puerto Rico do tremendous work. I've been fortunate enough to have been there about three times in the last year and a half, visiting with some of my associates that run the cooperativas in Puerto Rico. And Inclusive has done a just tremendous amount of work in getting grant funding to them and in getting SBA more involved so that the institutions there can start business lending programs, which not all of them did, not all of them do on the mainland either. But boy, the work they do is just tremendous. So inspiring. It's really inspiring.
So, and I wanted you to speak to our credit unions, because, you know, our listeners are just credit unions and the industry. And I'll say it like I want to say it. So I grew up in Pennsylvania, where a lot of times the Hispanic communities, it's the migrant workers, it's the people that came into a town to work in the local warehouses. It's very small relative to other communities. It's very segmented. In San Antonio, it's the community. Tell people about, for maybe in these other areas, maybe they have a biased perception of the community. Why is it good business to invest in making sure you're serving the Hispanic community?
Well, like I mentioned, about 66% of the market in San Antonio is Hispanic. Now, that includes both people that are citizens of the United States, and it includes recent immigrants that aren't. It includes people that don't have Social Security numbers but have individual taxpayer identification numbers, ITINs. And if you have an ITIN, there's no limit to what you can do everything with us. You can apply for a mortgage, you can get a car loan, you can get a small business loan, but not every institution makes those services available to ITIN holders. And we view it as, first of all, it's part of our mission to serve. We believe everyone has a basic right to safe and affordable financial products and services, regardless of citizenship status. And we put that, the regardless of citizenship status is important because a lot of people, we get a lot of immigrants in San Antonio that are staying. And it's our job to help them avoid the predatory lenders that are out there and help them become financially stable, because the faster they can become financially stable, the less government assistance they're going to be looking for. And so we made sure that all of our products and services are available to everybody. Now, if you're here and you don't have an ITIN, you can still open an account. At least you have somewhere to put your money. You know, we can't do lending, but we can help start you on the path towards becoming a citizen or obtaining that ITIN. To us, it just makes good business sense, and we see it as a service that we're providing to help strengthen the overall community in San Antonio. Because if an immigrant doesn't have access to our financial system, they're turning to payday lenders and finance companies and getting ripped off. And immigrants that come here, they're the bravest people I've ever met. I don't know that I could do it. You know, come to a country where I don't speak the language, I don't understand how the financial system works, and we have thousands of people that do that. It it's better for our economy if we can make them financially stable and help them buy the car, start the small business, buy the home. It's just, it makes our community stronger. And so we just see it as very important.
I see it. One of the pieces that I think is often overlooked is what you said too, is it's good business for everybody and it's good business for the economy. And when I think of where I grew up, the steel towns of Pennsylvania, every corner of the town had a different ethnic neighborhood. And it's really the same situation. Two generations ago, my family came to the United States to because they wanted to work in the coal mines. And now, two generations later, I'm an executive, credit union executive CEO. And it's going to be the same pattern, and it's good for everybody because also those are your future, their children are your future customers, and
absolutely,
they got a big loyalty.
Absolutely. And I grew up, went to high school in Pittsburgh, so I know those steel mill towns and those, here was the Greek neighborhood, here was the Polish neighborhood, here was the Italian neighborhood. And you have to... It's important to make sure that your products and service and your messaging resonates with the communities you're trying to serve. And it's not one size fits all, and it's not one message fits all. For example, with the immigrant community, we have to spend a lot of time talking about how we are insured by the NCUA. You know, we're not going to close tomorrow. No one has ever lost a dollar at a credit union that was insured by the NCUA. Because in a lot of the countries where, and they're not just all coming from Mexico, they're coming from everywhere. But I'll use Mexico as an example. Financial institutions close on a dime in some cases, and all the money's gone. We have to walk them. You know, hey, this is important. You know, this is important for you to realize that this is safe. We're not going anywhere. That credit is not a bad word. It's okay. That's how our economy is built, good or bad, is on credit, and that it's okay to borrow money to buy the car, to have a credit card, those kind of things. But we have to do a lot of explaining of how our products and services work. It's not their responsibility to know. It's our responsibility to educate and make sure they're comfortable so that they can make the right choices for their households and their small businesses.
So I want to pivot topics and talk about the credit union industry in general, and particularly small institutions. When I took over as CEO of the CUSO 11 years ago, there was over 8,800 credit unions. Now we're under 5,000. Give me your perspective in not only small credit unions existing, but thriving and being part of the community.
Yeah. So I was in a meeting not too long ago where someone made the point that at the current attrition rate, there will be no credit unions in about 10 years. We'll all be gone. And unfortunately, the decline is coming in the small credit union space. They're being acquired, they're being merged into larger credit unions. And I have some very strong opinions about that. Small credit unions are critical to making sure people have fair and equal access. You know, the term that was the term redlining that was so prevalent in the financial services industry about, you know, well, banks weren't lending in certain neighborhoods and you know, certain areas of town. Well, small credit unions serve those areas. And as small credit unions disappear into larger ones, they're also leaving those neighborhoods. And I don't make a lot of friends with this statement, but there are credit unions that are nothing more than banks in credit union clothing. And they've strayed away from the principles that credit unions were founded upon, and that was to serve the communities that they're located in. We have a real life example of that in San Antonio. We opened an office in a community center, which is a financial desert. There was a small credit union in there. They got acquired by a larger one. I won't say who. I won't name names. And that large credit union closed that office. And, you know, well, we're not making enough money out of that location. Well, that's not always what it's about. Yes, we have to be profitable. We have to keep the lights on, pay my staff, invest in technology, you know, give our members a good return. But it's not about ROA. It's about making an impact in the communities that you serve and doing it in a fiscally responsible manner. I want to at least break even every year. If we break even, that means we are investing in the credit union, but more importantly, we're giving our members a good return for their investment in the credit union, for their ownership in the credit union, and we're making good loans to that community. And as small credit unions disappear, the services that are available to these smaller rural communities or smaller communities comprised of minority groups, their access and their disappears as well. And it is something that NCUA really has to I've been encouraged with the NCUA under Todd Harper because I believe he understands that. And he and I have had this conversation. We've talked about it. And those small credit unions need to be able to thrive and because they're so important in serving the communities in which they were founded. And as they disappear, so does that access. It disappears as well. So to me the biggest issue facing the credit union movement is just what you mentioned, the fact that so many of these institutions are disappearing, and it's damaging the economy, and it's damaging those households and small businesses that relied on those small institutions.
And one of my pet peeves in life is when I'm at a conference, introduce, how you doing? Which credit union are you from? I'm from blank credit union. And the first thing that people follow up with is their asset size.
Exactly.
Your asset size is not an indicator on how good of a job that you do.
Exactly, because there are institutions that are very large that do great work. Greylock Credit Union up in Massachusetts, they are a multi-billion-dollar institution. They do very effective community work. They're a strong CDFI. They do great work, but unfortunately, they're kind of the exception to the rule, because as institutions get larger, it's almost like they lose contact with those community connections that when they were smaller were so important. You know, for us, it's, you know, our partnerships in our community are everything. The YWCA of San Antonio, Family Services, the several immigrant organizations that we work with, Empower Women's Center. These are really important for us to get our message out that hey, we can help. But as institutions get larger, they lose that touch and they start focusing on different things, and they're not making those small dollar loans that are so important. They're not being as involved in the community as they should.
Another one of my annoyances in life is as the credit union grows, fewer people show up at the annual meeting.
Yes.
Because when they are a smaller institution, there's much more of a sense of, I want to be part of the community. I'm involved. I have closeness to members. When I become a mega credit union, I do everything I can so somebody can't be on the board of directors. And I'll put this quietest notification ever for my annual meeting.
Yes, but you're right. That is as the institution gets larger, that kind of avoidance, I don't know if they do it intentionally or not, but you see it.
You get farther away from your community.
That's exactly what it is. It's a problem that I know. And I know we have some very large credit unions. They have $10, $15 billion in assets here in San Antonio. And they did great work back in the day. But now one of them in particular, and again, I won't name names, but one of them, if you say their names, like, oh, yeah, if you have A-plus paper, that's where you get your mortgage. Yep, that's what they're known for. And I'm not saying we don't do A-plus paper. We do. But more of our community is in that C and D range in terms of credit. And that's what we concentrate on because those are our members. And I don't try to compete. You know, we don't advertise or try to compete for that A-plus paper because they don't need us. They can go anywhere. But the people that we deal with that comprise our membership, they can't go everywhere. They could, but they're often turned away. And I hear that from our members. Yeah, we went there and they told us these 20 things we needed to do or blah, blah, blah. And we came to you and it's like two things and yeah. Yeah.
So running a credit union is becoming more complex with more moving parts every year.
Yes.
I hear a lot of credit unions pack it up because the CEO wants to retire. They can't find anybody competent for the previous CEO salary. What can credit unions or what do you recommend best practices of succession planning? So the when the CEO retires, merger isn't the first thing you lean on.
Exactly. And that's why a lot of small credit unions disappear is the CEO has been there 35 years. The senior staff has all been there 35 years. And when the CEO goes, there's no one to replace them. And it falls on the board to all of a sudden be a recruiter and that they haven't had to do it or they don't know how to do it. Succession planning is becoming more and more of an issue with the NCUA, and it'll start showing up on exams. Like we have our exam going on right now, and our examiner said, "Do you have one?" I said, "We do. We're starting to put one together because I've got about 7 years left before I exit." But it's not just for me. It's also we need one for my CFO. We need one for every quote senior position. You have to start early. And you have to start identifying those candidates early, whether they're internal or external. I've identified a couple of people internally that hopefully will still be here when my day comes. But the ultimate transition and what I'm trying to accomplish is I want that person taking a lot of my role while I'm still here so that maybe I'm not president anymore. I'm just CEO. And I can then it's a little, you're the president now. You're going to start doing a lot of the day-to-day stuff. I'm the CEO. I'm going to do Queen of England kind of things. You know, I'm going to go to the conferences and, that kind of stuff. But you have to start early and you have to really identify what are you looking for? What kind of traits, are out there? And if it's internal staff and they don't have that, well, then get it for them. Oh, I've got this person but they don't have any lending experience. Well, you got 5 years to get them lending experience. So let's work on that. If you invest in your staff, if you invest in their education and their skill set, that succession planning becomes a lot easier and a lot smoother. Hey, this person's been here for 10 years and they're moving into the CEO spot. Great. That's a great transition. But the challenge for the smaller ones is maybe they don't have enough staff. There's lots of three and four, there's a lot of small credit unions out there that have three or four employees. And they need to recruit someone who wants that opportunity. There are a lot of very bright and very eager younger people in our industry that would jump at the chance to do that. But it's finding them and identifying them and making them aware. And that's where small credit unions go, it's a lot easier just to merge out because how do we get that message out? And we've had a good run. Let's call it quits. Well, you're doing a disservice to your members when you do that.
Yeah. And I think it is cheaper to plan for succession and train up your staff. And also, once you're gone, you just don't replace the credit union on the street. That institution is gone and it takes years to replace.
Yep, it does. Because with a lot of the smaller institutions that are still out there, they serve a specific community. They serve these neighborhoods. They serve this employee group. And if they're gone, they're gone. That's it. And the larger institution oftentimes struggles with maintaining that connection and then just gives that up. Then just, You know, we're thinking larger scale here.
I know credit unions that have positions specifically to hire people to target for mergers. What is it like for a CEOs like yourself when you go to the credit union conferences and you're kind of getting schmoozed a little bit? Or do people just call you and say, hey, are you in the merger market? And we'll get you a nice consultation package. What is it like for the day-to-day CEO of a small credit union?
Yeah, I get those phone calls and those cold call emails quite frequently. You know, hey, we're looking to put together, you'd be great part of this coalition. Like, no, I wouldn't. You know, the one I shot down not too long ago called and they said, yeah, we're looking to, you know, we're representing institutions out of Dallas and Houston, and we think you'd be a great fit for this. And it, you know, I said, well, I don't want to be part of a bank. And they said, well, it's not a bank. I go, yeah, it is. I said, that's what you're going to become, and that's what would happen to my members. We're proud of being independent, and our board is very committed to that. And that's what I tell people. I say, you know what? You can talk to me and you're going to get a no, or you can talk to my board chair and get the same no. They see the value in staying independent and supporting this movement by making sure we're you know, financially strong. You know, our capital is very strong, and I always listen to the, what are they pitching today kind of thing. But it amazes me how many, your point of getting introduced to someone and the first thing they tell you is their asset size. That's the same thing with these merger pitches. Well, it'd be a $3 billion. I don't care. We're $150 million in assets. We're going to grow on our own. We've got plans to, grow by getting more members, you know, and doing more lending. We also are working on getting to the point where we can support smaller institutions, where we can sell them loans that they might need to, you know, for their balance sheet. Can we help with keeping a small institution up to date on regulations and compliance, because that's another burden for the smaller institutions. I got to hire someone to do this. You know, yeah, I have a chief risk and compliance officer. We have someone who does a great job with that. But in the smaller institutions, that's the president's job. You know, or the CFO's job. You know, or maybe the president is both CFO and CEO. And when we advocate for regulatory relief for those small institutions, especially the ones under 50 million in assets, it's, you know, come on. You can't treat them. You cannot treat a $30 million credit union the same way you do a $10 billion credit union. You just can't do it because they can't keep up. And that's another reason at the end of the day that the small institution goes, I'm done. We're out. We just can't do this.
So if you could wave the magic wand and make some changes to revitalize small credit unions, slow down the mergers, or potentially even grow the number of credit unions in our business, what would be your top few items?
Well, regulatory relief, true regulatory relief from the NCUA for smaller institutions would be first and foremost. Let them be exempt from some of the check the box reporting requirements that are very time consuming and ultimately can be very expensive. I'm not saying they don't comply with rules and regulations. I'm saying they don't have to report on it the same way a large institution does, who has a large credit union that has a whole department that does nothing but HMDA reporting. That's the small institution just can't do that. So regulatory relief would be one. The other one would be, and it's a little more complicated, I think, it's a little trickier, is that succession planning that we talked about. What is actually being done? And that may not be at the NCUA level. That may be at the state league office level. And I've told that to our league that we're a part of. You've got to help. You've got to be able to connect people without charging the small credit union, you know, $25,000 to do recruiting. You've got to be able to support them and help them identify and find these candidates so that credit union can stay viable and stay open and stay independent. And I think it, third, as far as growing the number of institutions, I think there has to be more government assistance to allow that to happen. And that's not just from the NCUA, that's from the Treasury Department, and hate to go saying the federal government needs to help make this happen, but they do, because the as those small institutions disappear, more and more people are getting excluded from our industry. And that means they're going to be going to the government with their hand out saying, I need help. So that's the message I get when we talk to our elected officials about the CDFI fund, for example. You know, the CDFI fund got about $300 million in funding last year, which is a drop in the bucket for most things, government allocations. And the message is pretty simple. If you to the reps that always say, we want to eliminate that fund. Well, if you eliminate that fund, then we can't do some of the things that we do to help our members, which means they're going to look to the government. They're going to have their hand out, and it's going to cost you way more money than allocating that money to the CDFI fund to allow us to do that lending and that outreach and to help people become financially stable and not be on assistance, because nobody wants to be on assistance. But I get it. Yeah, trying to keep the budget tight. But this is an area where the more that goes into that CDFI fund, the more support goes out to CDFI institutions, which includes a lot of smaller ones, and enables them to do more in their communities as far as helping people be, again, financially stable and financially independent, households and small businesses.
Jeff, I could turn this into a 4-hour show and keep going.
I know.
Because I think we're both pretty passionate about this topic. But yes. If somebody listening wants to check out River City, what's your contact information and website where they could see what you're up to?
So you can check us out at River City FCU, Federal Credit Union, rivercityfcu.org. And anybody can call me direct. I have no problem with that. My direct line is 210-244-2545. I welcome anybody that wants to call or has a question or wants to tell me to go fly a kite, whatever, that's fine. But I am passionate about it. And because I think it's really important. I wish I was a younger person, had more time to try to make an impact here. But, you know, ultimately, that's what we aim for at River City, is we're not going to be the biggest institution in San Antonio. And that's not our goal. It's never been our goal. Our goal is to have the biggest impact for each and every member on a daily basis. And as long as we keep that in mind, yeah, we have no designs on being this multi-billion-dollar institution. I mean, if we get there someday the right way, fine. Like I mentioned earlier, there are institutions of that size that continue to do great work. And that's a testament to their leadership and their boards. But there's also a lot that don't. And that's also a testament to their leaders and boards.
Well, thank you very much. So joining me today was Jeff Ivey, the CEO of River City Federal Credit Union in San Antonio, Texas. Please subscribe on your favorite audio platform so we come right to your phone or however you listen every 2 weeks. And I would love to have Jeff back on, and I'm looking forward to see him in person. So Jeff, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Mark. Yeah, anytime. And yeah, maybe see you at the Inclusive Conference coming up.
I'll see you soon enough.
Sounds great. Okay.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Credit Union Conversations podcast. Have a question? Visit markritter.com for more information.